Well, we started a series in Revelation 13 months ago, January 2006, and we discovered that it is a picture book. It's a picture book drawn with words, and it's a series of overlapping pictures. It maps out the history of all things from before time to the endless ages to come. And as we come to the climax of the book of Revelation, so the pictures are surpassingly wonderful. And we have in chapters 21 and 22 these pictures of heaven. And we saw the first picture last time, and that was verse 1 of chapter 21. Now I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no more sea. And we thought about that, and if you want to think more, know more about the new heaven, the new earth, the new creation, then do get the tape. But Christian friends, the new heavens and the new earth are to be our home forever. And that's why we read verse 2, then I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. So who or what is the New Jerusalem? It's also a bride. So who is that? The church, that's right. It's the church, the bride of Christ. It's the whole number of the redeemed. It's all the people of God. But do you see, when God created the first heavens and the first earth, when all things were ready, he then created man and he brought him into a garden paradise. And only now, when all is ready, when our eternal home has been prepared to perfection, only then does the Lord carry his bride over the threshold. It's wonderful, isn't it? It's a beautiful picture. How do we look at pictures? You look at a picture and say, and then you go to an art gallery and you say, now what percentage of this picture is blue? And let's count how many people are in this picture. And how many people in this picture have blonde hair? And what are the dimensions of this picture? Well, you could ask lots and lots of questions, couldn't you? And you'd never know anything about the picture. The only way to appreciate a picture is actually to stand and gaze and look and think and go back and look some more. That's how Revelation works. These beautiful pictures are being drawn for us. And it says to simply stop, look, gaze, drink in the scene. There's a home prepared. There's a bride, the church. She's prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. So Christian friends, think about it. Wherever we look on the new, in the new heavens and the new earth, wherever we gaze, we'll be gazing upon perfection. You can never say that in this world, can you? Even the perfect moment passes usually in seconds. Look upon a sunset, but the sunset changes. You look upon a beautiful bird, but it flies away. And most of the time we don't gaze on anything near beauty and perfection. But we'll gaze upon perfection. Our eyes will be undimmed, unwearied by the wonder and glory of it all. But then we'll be looking at ourselves. We'll be a bride adorned for her husband. We'll have resurrection bodies. We'll no longer be walking around in these tatty, torn tents. You know, Paul calls the body a tent. And it's a good description, isn't it? A tent is something temporary. It's to get you from one place to another place. Well, these tents are to get us just simply across the wilderness to the promised land. And the longer we go on through the wilderness, the more tatty and torn they become. Until at the end of our pilgrimage, they're taken down. They've serve their purpose. But the ultimate purpose is that we should be further clothed with glorious, incorruptible resurrection bodies. And on that day we'll have stripped off this old mortality, this corruptible body. You know, it's just like you've been out working hard and maybe you've been in the heat of the day, and at the end of the day you look at your t-shirt and it's all dirty and it's sweaty and it's all, and you can't wait. You strip off the old dirty clothes, don't you, and you step into a shower. And it's a lovely feeling, isn't it? You just sort of, everything's renewed and revived and you feel human again. Well, we'll strip off these shameful, ugly, soiled bodies and we'll be clothed with glorious, incorruptible resurrection bodies. Paul writes to the Romans, he says, for the earnest expectation of the creation eagerly awaits for the revealing of the sons of God. Now, if you look at a school photograph, or you look at a wedding photograph, and you say, on this photograph, who are the Christians? Well, by looking at a photograph, you can't tell, can you? If you go down to Twickenham High Street and you say, well, just by looking at people, can you tell who the Christians are? Well, you can't tell, can you? There's nothing in our appearance. It's often something in the way we behave, but nothing in our appearance, the way we look, which marks us out as being Christians. We don't know who the Christians are just by looking at them. But on that day, what does it say? It says the creation eagerly waits for the revealing of the sons of God. On that day, Christians will look like what they are. They will look like the children of God. You can't see them now. They're just like the children of Adam now. But on that day, they will be revealed as the children of God. For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. Glory is not just somewhere where we're going. Glory is something that will be revealed in us. Glorious resurrection bodies which will reveal the glory of God himself. We'll shine out with the beauty of holiness. Remember, Jesus says the parable of the wheat and the tares, that you will shine like the sun in the kingdom of your Father. Can you think about that? You think of the sun shining in its strength. Says Jesus, that will be the children of God. They will shine like the sun in the kingdom of the Father. As angels look into our faces, there'll be a sense in which they will fall back, because they will see in the faces of the children of Adam, they'll no longer be the children of Adam, they'll be the children of God. They'll see the glory of God shining out. John says in his letter, he says, Beloved, now we are children of God. But just by looking, you can't tell, can you? Now we are children of God, and it's not yet been revealed what we shall be. But we know that when he is revealed, we shall be like him. For we shall see him as he is. We'll be a bride prepared. As Christ mirrors the Father, so the bride will mirror Christ. He will look into us and see the perfect image of himself. He'll be ravished by his bride. She'll capture him with one look of her eyes. It's the glory that will be revealed in us. And Christian friends, it says here, as a bride adorned for her husband, it'll be collectively the people of God will be the bride. We're many, and yet we'll be one, with one heart, one voice, one delight, one Jesus. And we'll talk more about that when we get to verse 9 and onwards, because we're told, verse 9, come, I will show you the bride, the Lamb's wife. So we'll have to save that until we get to there. But you see, if the sight of the renewed universe takes our breath away, and if the creation, as Paul says, waits in hushed excitement to see the children of God revealed, what would it be like to see our beloved, to see our bridegroom, our husband, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband? Well, more of that when we get to chapter 22. So the Lord carries his bride across the threshold to their new home. That's the imagery. And therefore read verse 3, and I heard a loud voice from heaven saying, behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people. God himself will be with them and be their God. Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men. When the children of Israel were going through the wilderness, everywhere they went, the tabernacle went with them. It was a picture of God's dwelling amongst his people. But now the picture is not, as it were, the tabernacle amongst the people of God. The picture is now that actually we go to dwell inside the tabernacle. That's the picture. We're living inside but not obviously that copy, but the reality, the true tabernacle. It's simply saying this, it's saying God's home is now our home. The love, the joy, the wonder, the glory, the holiness of heaven will fill then the entire redeemed, renewed universe. Habakkuk looks to the day when he says, "For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea." What will it be like? God dwells among us now, doesn't he? In this world, there are local churches where God is especially strangely present with his people. He dwells amongst us now. But now there is always a sense of separation. Can I see Jesus? Well, we answer that in one sense. Yes, we do. There are times when his word is opened, when we're with his people and maybe at the Lord's table. Other times we feel such a sense of his presence. But there's another sense in which I don't see him. Peter says, he says to those who write to him, he says, "Whom having not seen you love." We haven't seen him, have we, in that sense? Do I hear Jesus' voice audibly speaking to me with ears that I can hear a voice calling my name? Well, no, we don't, do we? Not in that sense. Do I feel the fullness of his love towards me? Well, there's always a distance, isn't there, in this world? There's always a dark providence, which, as it were, seems to put a distance between me and the enjoyment and full experience of his love. Or there's indwelling sin. I don't see things as they really are. I don't understand. I'm slow to believe and I'm so quick to depart. And then there's the corruption of body and mind. Our minds don't work as they should, do they? Our emotions don't work as they should. Our bodies don't work as they should. All those things mean there's a sense of separation. And we're assaulted by the wicked one. And we're hated by the world. God is with us, but we can't escape that sense of separation. Even in the most wonderful moments, when we say Christ is near and we feel his presence, the moment passes, doesn't it? It doesn't go on and on and on. We have to come down from the mountaintop. And it's like that because we're pilgrims through an alien world on our way home. But what happens when we get home? If someone invites you to their home, you feel you're getting to know the real them, don't you? You think it's a big step forward, isn't it? You go to someone's home, you think, well, I'm getting to know them. And you and you go around the home and you see the things they have on their walls, or just the way things are, the furnishings, the sounds in a home, even the smell of a home. Every home has its own smell, doesn't it? That's a funny thing. But and then you see someone at home, it's home, isn't it? And they take their shoes off. Or maybe you've caught them on the hop and they come to the door in their pyjamas or dressing gown. It's home, isn't it? Because they're at home, they're at ease, they're relaxing. And if you go to someone's home, you see them as they really are. You see them as themselves. There's no pretense, is there? If you live in someone's home for anything longer than a few hours, you get to know the real them because it's their home. So what will it be like to come home to God's home? I know that God's home is my home. And there'll be no more distance, no more separation. To witness God as himself, God at ease, God relaxing, God at home with his children. Just what will it be like to run into the home and say, "I'm home"? And my heavenly Father say, "Ah, you're home." And relaxing with all his children. The war's over. The battle's done. We could all go home to rest with Father. Children in the Father's house. To witness God in all his fullness. And to be face to face with him. To really see him. To hear him speak to me by name. To hold him. To be lost in wonder, love and praise. What would it be like? More of that as we come to chapter 22. But God's home will be our home. It'll be our new home. It's where I belong. And I heard a loud voice from heaven saying, "Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people. God himself will be with them and be their God." God says again and again, he says, "I'll be with you and you'll be with me." Well, I call that home. It's going home. It's going home to the Father's house. little boy ran home from school. And he ran into a house, ran into the house through the door, came straight back out again. And someone said to him, well, what's the problem? He said, oh, I ran into the wrong house. He said, our house is next door. So the person's obviously been a bit, said it with a twinkle in his eye. He says, wasn't that house as nice as your house? And the little boy said, oh, yes, actually, that house is nicer than my house. So the person said, well, why didn't you stay there then? He said, oh, because my mum's not there. And that's the sense of it, isn't it? Father's there. That's why it's home. My father's there. I've longed to see him. I've wanted to be with him. I think one of the, I forget who it was now, he said, when I die and I go to heaven, I shall go there with all the excitement of a schoolboy bounding home at the beginning of the summer holidays. That sort of feeling, you leave school, it's the summer holidays, you're going home. You think, no more school. That excitement you feel. Well, that's how he spoke about going home to be with the Lord. Will we feel strange in heaven? No, it'll be home. You don't feel strange at home, do you? It'll be my Father's home. It's where I've always belonged. So when I get there, I will have that sense of this is where I belong. This is the home I've been looking for. You read Psalm 42, and there's a man out of sorts. What's the matter with him? He's far from home. In this world, as Christians, often we're all out of sorts. What's the matter? We're far from home. Nobody wants to be far from home, do they? But when you come home, it's where you belong. And that'll be the sense of it. And if you have any doubts, look at the next verse, verse 4. And God will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying. There shall be no more pain, for the former things have passed away. And God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. Did you never as a kid run home crying? You know what it is? Or sometimes actually you manage to stop crying until you get through the front door, then you burst into tears, yes, or whatever. But often, you know, you run home crying, and your mother or your father, they wipe away your tears, don't they? And they say, it's all right, you're home now. You're home now. And that's the picture, isn't it? God can't stop himself from wiping away our tears. God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. He'll say, it's all right, you're home now. It's all right. There shall be no more death. The last enemy will be slain. And what will we do? We will be dancing on the grave of death. And we'll be saying, death, where is your sting? You can't hurt me anymore. And for us, our own death is not the end. Our own death is just the beginning. We're in this world until death brings it to an end. But in the world to come, it won't be brought to an end. There'll be no more death. And verse 4, nor sorrow. Christian friend, are you sad today? Why are you sad? Have you ever had a dream and you've woken up in distress? It's been a horrible dream. And you've woken up upset and you're so relieved to find it's just a dream. That sort of feeling? Oh, it was just a dream after all. Do you see? A day will come when we'll wake up to a new day, an eternal day, and there'll be no more sorrow ever again. Nor crying. There's a thought. The day will come and I will cry my last tear. A last tear will roll down my cheek. And after that there'll be no more tears. My last tear. We're told in Psalm 56 verse 8 that God puts all our tears in a bottle. It's a thought, isn't it? God collects all our tears. So he knows how many tears we've shed. And he knows why those tears were cried. And for each tear, he will provide a perfect comfort. There'll be no more crying. And no more pain. All that gives us pain. Our sins. Our loved ones unsaved. That gives great pain, doesn't it? The fact that we're living in bodies which are dysfunctional and diseased, and we actually experience sometimes very acute physical pain, or mental pain, or emotional pain. And there's just the pain, isn't there, of living as a stranger in a cursed world. I don't belong here. And so much of what goes on pains me and grieves me. All the things that belong to this cursed world, there'll be no more, for the former things will have passed away. There shall be no more pain, for the former things have passed away. And Isaiah, we're told this in Isaiah 65, verse 17. For behold, I create new heavens and a new earth, and the former shall not be remembered or come to mind. For the former things have passed away, they won't even come to mind. You know, there are familiar things, and they prompt memories, don't they? They bring back memories, but sometimes those familiar things bring back sad memories. I left 125 Harefield Road in 1996 for the last time. It had been my home. I've never been back. I've never driven past. I don't really know, quite know why, but I just feel I can't. Because, well, it was my home, and I live there with my parents. And if I go back and if I see anything, I'll be thinking of my parents. I'll be thinking perhaps of happy times, of family times. Or maybe I'll look at the home and they'll have made changes to it. And I don't really want to see that. Sometimes familiar things bring with them sad memories, don't they? But though the new heavens and new earth, there will be a sense in which they will be familiar to us. Because it'll be home, and home is where you belong, isn't it? Home is not a strange place. There'll be that lovely sense of this is home, this is familiar. There will nevertheless be nothing in it to bring to mind the pain and the sorrow and the sadness of this life. We won't be walking through thinking, oh, I remember that, and oh, that's come to mind. All those things which cause us sorrow in this life will not be remembered in the life to come. We really will be at peace. Verse 5, then he who sat on the throne said, behold, I make all things new. And new means new. Well, as you read that, you think, well, maybe it seems all too good to be true. And before we have time to start going down that path, the Lord quickly comes in, verse 5, to reassure us. And he said to me, write, for these words are true and faithful, or true and trustworthy. So, Christian friends, it really is real. God's promises cannot, will not, never disappoint. As Adoniram Judson says, my future is as bright as the promises of God. And before there's any but, no buts. Verse 6, it is done. And he said to me, it is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. It's done. So certain is the fulfillment of these things, consider it done. God's promises won't fail. All that God has decreed, all that God has promised, all that God has designed, all will be fulfilled. Says who? Says the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. The one who is before time, the one who is after time. The Sovereign Lord, the Maker of all things. Christian friends, that is a certainty upon which to build your whole life. Let the realities of that day shape the priorities of this day. So, Christian friend, look ahead. What awaits you? Verse 6, I will give of the fountain of the water of life freely to him who thirsts. He who overcomes shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he shall be my son. That's what lies ahead of the child of God. Now look behind you. Verse 8. But the cowardly, unbelieving, abominable, murderers, sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. That's what we've left behind. Heaven is where we're headed. Can there be any doubt about the road to take? So with that in front of us and those things behind us, can there be any doubt, Christian friend, that you're doing the right thing following Christ, whatever the cost, whatever the pain of following him today? I want to close by teaching you a poem. It's not one of those embarrassing things, don't worry. It's a poem that was taught to me by Jeff Thomas. It was a poem taught to him by a Ghanaian believer. Now, this Ghanaian believer was invited at a meeting in Wales, Welsh churches, to come and speak to the people. And to a people who have poetry in their soul, the Welsh, this Ghanaian brother said, I have a poem for you. And this is the poem. You'll remember it. Okay? He said this. He said, go on, go on, go on, go on and on and on. Go on, go on, go on, go on and on and on. That's the poem, isn't it? He who overcomes, he who goes on, he who overcomes shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he shall be my son.